So, Bob Dietrich, talk to me about some of these other issues that people are concerned about, hydrofracking.
Yeah, well, you know, there is a lot of controversy over hydrofracking, and I've heard it. I've been out in the district for quite a while now, and you hear all the sides of it. And again, I think probably a common theme of my candidacy is looking at both sides of the coin. And I see that there is a real positive to extracting this resource from the ground, and there's also a real concern about some of the environmental issues. And I think they both need to be addressed. And if I guess I would be in agreement with our governor and our president in that if we can do it safely, we need to do it.
It's a big if.
It is.
So, you know, you're a banker. You've done well in your profession. You know, there were these people out in the streets talking about the one percenters. What do you think? Should we tax the rich more?
Well, I think I don't like the Band-Aid fixes, and I don't like the way we play with the tax code. It's 90,000 pages right now, and the healthcare law, from what I hear, is going to add another 13,000 pages to that. It's ridiculous, and I don't think there's a lot of room for tax growth. I think we need to simplify across the board, not just taxes, but that's one of them. If we're talking about tax reform, it needs to be simple. If I'm a business, and again, I'm coming at it from a business perspective, if it's that difficult to figure out how much you owe me, you're probably going to do business somewhere else. I couldn't do business that way, and I think that hurts our nation. And if you really want to fix the job problems, this is what you do. You make an easier way to determine and businesses determine that it makes sense to do business in America and here.
But shouldn't some of these people who pay no taxes, big corporations, Supreme Court now says corporations are people, and then we hear again and again some of the most recognizable names in America in terms of big corporations pay no taxes. Is that right?
Yeah, it's funny. I think, as I said, the tax reform needs to be simpler. So if you did that, if you did what was done in the Bull-Simpson report, where they basically took away all of those deductions, all of them, and brought it down to a lower rate that kept it basically revenue neutral. And then if you need to add a couple deductions, for whatever reason, you can see exactly how much that costs. But then everyone would know exactly what they were paying. They would know what other people are paying. And there wouldn't be this stigma of, we think you're paying less, we don't know. What those corporations are doing now, I think they should be paying taxes. But I don't... Basically, what they're doing is following the rules that the Congress set. Congress says...
Well, they paid for the lobbyists. When you get there, let me just say, Bob, I don't know much, but I know when you get in that office, they're going to be pounding on your door saying, hey, you're a good Republican. You know, you got to help us, the GEs and everybody else around here, and then we'll give you some money to run in your campaign. I mean, that's the reality. That's how those deductions all got there.
Well, I don't know. I think that's a big part of it, but I think the other side of it is... you know, we want to spur growth. So we tell businesses that they can write off 100% of equipment they purchase this year. So they all go out and purchase a bunch of equipment this year. That reduces their income. They pay zero taxes this year, but they did exactly what we told them to do.
We did exactly what the lobbyists told you should vote for so that they could do that. No?
Well, I guess I can't get into the minds of the current congressman. It appears to me that they have... admirable goals in trying to produce jobs. They want businesses to buy more equipment because they're basically have a lot of cash on their balance sheet, and they see this as a way for them to buy equipment, and it makes sense to them. But it's a Band-Aid, and you move a lot of equipment into this year, you reduce your tax revenues, and then you pay for it next year because there's no pent-up demand for equipment at that point.
Well, now, Steve Forbes wanted a flat tax. Could you live with that? You know, the Republicans generally like it, I think, because it means that it's not progressive. Everybody's paying the same percentage. How would you feel about that?
I do like that. But at the same time, I don't have any problem with some progressivity. And I do like, and I've mentioned the Bull-Simpson report, and there's a lot of things in there I don't like. But the thing I really like about it is that it brings that down, reduces the deductions, and makes it simpler. And the thing I really love about that is it appears that something like that could pass. That while You know, right now, while these two sides are drawing their lines in the sand and the debt's going up exponentially, if you implement something like this and it accomplishes your goals of bringing the deficit down, now you can argue all you want, and we're not building up that debt. So at least you're on the right trajectory, and I believe it could pass. So I would not have a problem with something like that. I think it would work well.
Who are the enemies of the United States now, as you see it? You know, you talked about a defense system. Who do we have to watch out for?
Well, I guess the there's certainly these terrorist groups. The Al-Qaeda, I think, is probably one of our main enemies. But I think there's a lot of undefined enemies that I'm hopeful we're tracking. I don't know how well we are. I don't know how well our intelligence is doing. I don't have not privy to that information. But I certainly, if I were in Congress, especially on those committees, I would love to be able to make sure we're doing a good job there. I think that's vital.
But we don't have a Soviet Union anymore, and we don't have a major adversary who we can then justify raising the defense funds. Certainly, Al-Qaeda is not exactly in the old Soviet model. It's dangerous as hell, we know that. But in fact, you don't need a huge number of people for that, do you?
Well, it's hard to say, you know, what will come up. I know when in the late 90s, I can remember people saying, we will never be at war again. We should almost do away with our military because the Berlin Wall came down. Nothing will ever happen. And all of a sudden, we were attacked, and thousands of people died in New York City. And so you can't necessarily predict where it's coming from. I think intelligence is key.
Okay, we only got two more minutes. You're a banker. There's a big debate now as to whether banks should be further regulated, whether we should reinstall Glass-Steagall, and, you know, so that there's a wall between their banking business and their investment business. Where are you?
I think most of the regional bankers and banks that aren't the big money center banks would not have a problem with the Glass-Steagall, reinstating Glass-Steagall. I think there is some merit to that. I think that's the general feeling among banks my size.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about banks the big size? Would you be willing to, you know, go up against them and say, look, you guys have really screwed this up and we need to make sure that people are protected?
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? A lot of these, I guess my problem with a lot of the regulations that have come out and especially the ones that have been knee-jerk reactions are they are so complex. And in fact, I tried to go down to see my opponent down in who wasn't my opponent at the time, but as the CFO of a bank in his district, to discuss some of these laws, because they were really having an effect of us not being able to help our customers. And a lot of times, that's what happens. They have unintended consequences.
So give me an example. Only got a minute, but give me an example of one of those.
Well, a lot of them are if you want to write a loan under $50,000.
Right.
You cannot sell that loan in the aftermarket.
Oh.
So you have to retain
those.
Well, we
know why that is.
Right, and you have to retain those on your books. But there are laws now that say you can't charge more than 50 basis points over what the going rate is on the secondary market, which is funded completely different than a smaller bank would be. So I can't take a loan, and we're in the twos now on a 15-year mortgage. So say you get into 3.25%, on a 15-year mortgage, for a $50,000 mortgage, for me to hold on the books is dangerous, because if rates go up, you're kind of stuck with this asset that would be worth less if rates go up. And if you have to market to market, like the new Basel III rules, which are based on a lot of the Dodd-Frank stuff, you could be in a lot of trouble. So now there's this poor person that wants a $50,000 mortgage, $45,000 mortgage, that can't find it anywhere. And those were the people the community banks used to be able to help. The bigger banks wouldn't. And now we can't even help them. And so I just think they're complex.
Was there a better way of solving all of this?
Well, less regulation. Those types of things don't need to be regulated, in my opinion, to that degree. If you give us a chance, and we have not had a foreclosure. My bank has not had a foreclosure through this whole thing, not one single foreclosure.
Hmm.
So we weren't part of that mess, and most of the banks, our size especially, were not. These regulations end up hurting the people they're trying to help.
Bob Diedrich is a Republican and conservative candidate for New York's 20th district seat, currently held by Democrat Paul Tonko. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.